Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Valerie Ward.
I was at a storytelling workshop, the What's Your Story workshop for the Risk podcast. And when I started telling that story out loud to strangers, and I saw that they cared about me, and they were worried about me, and they just met me, and I'm there, I'm okay, but that they cared, that really made me rethink what this story has to tell me.
Yep, I'm familiar with that whole thing. But first, folks, we have, a little ways off, but they're coming, two big holidays. There's Halloween, and then there's, well, many holidays, the winter holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, Kwanzaa, etc., etc. So pitch us your scary stories or your fun winter holidays kinds of stories. We need them at risk-show.com/submissions.
We'll be right back.
Now here's the show. Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is the Undercover Dream Lovers behind me now. And we're calling this week's episode Sink or Swim, an episode about calling for help and keeping each other safe when the world gets dangerous. Folks, I did a check-in for the first time in many months that I posted on Patreon on July 28th. Now, it's free even for non-Patreon members to listen to there. I had been avoiding doing a check-in for a long time because I've been pretty overwhelmed about this first 6 months of this new presidential administration. And I wanted to be really careful to keep the check-in hopeful as I could, and offer us all moral support. But I also wanted to be real. I didn't want to sugarcoat things. I wanted to speak authentically about, you know, I wanted to be real. I wanted to be raw and real, which is the whole point of this thing we've got here, this entire podcast. I also wanted to talk about my hopes and dreams, my best intentions about this huge leap I'm taking in about 50 days with my move to Thailand. So, again, the check-in is free for all to access at patreon.com/risk. Even if you're not a Patreon member, you can hear me speaking straight to the heart, doing my best to be as authentic as I can with you about what has been a brutal year so far. But it's also, I will tell you one thing, it has been a year when I am valuing storytelling in the creation of this podcast, in our What's Your Story social events, and in these workshops I'm leading online, I've been valuing it all so much more than ever before. I never thought that 16 years into this, I would arrive at a place of so dearly loving and so deeply believing in it on another level. It's astounding to me. I'll tell you, the workshops have been they've been so beautiful, and quite frankly, they've been like therapy for me. I've decided that I will indeed keep teaching online storytelling workshops once I'm in Bangkok. These ones, of course, were partly to raise money for my being able to make this move. But now, you know, they just seem so essential to me. So I want to do a careful reassessment of how to improve them. I want to tweak them once I move. I'm paying close attention to students' feedback. And yes, the time difference will make it so that I'll only be able to offer them in what for people in the U.S. will be early in the morning or somewhat later in the evening. But I'll experiment. I'll figure all that out. And this particular episode will be dropping, and yes, I said dropping, on August 12th. And so the final workshop I'm offering this summer before the move starts on August 17th. So email me at kevin@risktestshow.com to learn more about that. Now, in a little bit, we're going to hear from David Pattison. But before that, a story from Valerie Ward. Now, in our curated socials that we call What's Your Story, either myself or another RIS staff member leads a room full of people or a Zoom grid full of people through little ice-breaking activities where everyone tells very short stories, usually mostly on the lighter side and mostly in pairs or small groups. But then at the end, we often have a few volunteers share something they told earlier in the social to the entire room or to the entire Zoom grid. And I think it was last summer that Valerie Ward, who we'd never met before, told this story at a What's Your Story in Brooklyn. So we asked her to flesh it out a bit and workshop it with us so she could do it at a RISC live show in New York, which is what you're about to hear. Here is Valerie Ward now with a story we call Treading Water.
So when I was young, my family would often go to my grandparents' lake house. They had a lake house out in Burnett, Texas that my grandfather had built, and it was kind of their vacation house. And so there was one summer where my family went. It was me. I was about 7 years old. My two little brothers, who were twins, they were about 4 and a half, and my mom and my dad and my grandparents. And so we drive out to the lake house and we get there, and it's one of those two stories. You go in on the top story and then you go down. So we all got into our swimsuits, so excited. I loved water when I was a kid. I loved swimming. I loved being in the pools. I was just so excited to go and jump in the lake. I think this was the first time I had actually been to the lake house. And I remember like a long kind of pathway out to this U-shaped dock. And I remember like just running down the dock and feeling it kind of bounce under me. My family was all over kind of on the left side of the dock, and then there was the boat, and then I was over on the right side. And I was just so ready to jump in, and I didn't even have a life jacket on or anything, and I just jumped into the lake. And if you've ever, like, I was used to going to pools, so when you jump into a pool, you go down, you hit the bottom, you kind of bounce yourself back up, and then you're on the surface again. But when you jump into a lake, there's basically no bottom that you hit. So I just went down, and then I was instantly so disoriented. Like, wait, where's the bottom? Why aren't I going up? Which way is up? Oh no, where am I? And I finally kind of got myself back into like, okay, wait, this way is up. If I just keep kind of clawing my way up, I'll get up to the surface. And I got back up to the surface and I was breathing air again and I was so relieved. And then I looked around and I realized I was not in the open water. I was underneath the dock. And so it was like kind of the water is up to my neck. There's maybe a foot or two of air above me before those, like, the wood of the dock. And then all around is this metal cage that's floating in the water, and it goes down a few feet. And so I feel this, like, panicky, trapped feeling. Okay, I need to get out. And so I try diving down, but every time I come back up, because I'm so disoriented under the water and panicking, I'm still under the dock. And I keep trying to dive down and come back up, and I can't get up. And I'm just so worried, and I feel myself getting tired, and I think, oh no, am I going to drown here? And you might be wondering at this point, why doesn't she just call for help? Her family is right there. So I should probably tell you a little bit more about my family at this point. This was about 1 year before my parents would get divorced. My dad would remarry within a year after the divorce, and his new wife would come with two daughters, one of whom would basically replace me. And he was very stern. Everything, he really cared about appearances. He wanted everything to look right to other people. And if we ever made a mistake, he would, you know, admonish us. He would, you know, deprive us of things that we enjoyed. It was just like, you don't make mistakes with my dad. It just was not okay. And I didn't ever really have much of a relationship with him. He was a doctor. He was always at work. And after my parents got divorced, I just kept seeing him less and less and less. My mom was also pretty emotionally absent, but she was physically present, but she just kind of never reacted to anything, never really took an interest in parenting me, never really did much of anything to take care of me or her. After my parents were divorced, I remember just there were some times where she didn't have a job and we couldn't pay the electric bill and we didn't have any groceries. And so we had cornmeal mush for dinner by candlelight because that's all there was. And so she just, like, did not have a survival instinct for me or for her. Just, like, barely getting by was plenty for her. And so I was there and it just didn't occur to me. Trapped under this dock, 7 years old, trying to stay afloat, it just didn't occur to me that I could ask for help. I wanted someone to notice and help me, but I didn't feel like I was allowed to ask for help. So I just figured it out on my own. I kept diving down, and eventually one of those times I came back up, and I was out on the open lake. I could see the sky above me, and I felt such a relief. And I made my way back over to the ladder of the dock, and I climbed back up on the dock. And I could remember feeling like those weathered, soft boards under my body, and like the warmth of the sun soaking them in. And I didn't cry. I didn't even tell anyone what had happened. I didn't get any comfort, except for just the comfort of being there on a semi-solid land. And I always took a lesson away from this story. I always told myself that the lesson of this story was I should not take risks, that when I take risks, it gets me into trouble. And that's always kind of the way I moved through life. I've always had a hard time trusting people because I just never believed anyone would be there or care or want to help me. But I had never told this story out loud to anyone until I was at a storytelling workshop, the What's Your Story workshop for the Risk podcast. And when I started telling that story out loud to strangers, and I saw that they cared about me, and they were worried about me, and they just met me, and I'm there, I'm okay, but that they cared, that really made me rethink what this story has to tell me. And I think now the lesson of that story is that people do care for me. And I needed help back then. I needed someone to help me, and I needed someone to care about me. And everybody needs that. And the people that I have in my life now are not my family. They're people who choose to know me. And it's okay for me to reach out to them and ask them for help and ask for their support and to trust that they'll be there when I need them.
Nobody heard him, the dead man, but still he lay moaning. I was much further out than you thought, and not waving, but drowning. Poor chap. He always loved larking, and now he's dead. It must have been too cold for him. His heart gave way, they said. Oh, no, no, no. It was too cold always. Still the dead one lay moaning. I was much too far out all my life, and not waving, but drowning.
We'll be right back.
From comedians like Mike Birbiglia, Tig Notaro, and Bill Burr, to astronauts, teachers, and Nobel Prize winners, every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
Is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
To hear stories of humor, heart, and connection, follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
Risk. This is Frank Ocean behind me now, and we just heard Not Waving But Drowning by Stevie Smith, read by Glenda Jackson. It's been a while since we've had a poem on the show. By the time I was in high school in the 80s, that one was kind of a staple in English lit textbooks. But it kind of hits differently nowadays. Before that, we heard from Valerie Ward, who you can find on Instagram at Vale Toil. Let me spell that. That's V-A-L-E-T-O-I-L-E. I don't know how to pronounce that. Folks, the best way to learn about when we'll do our next What's Your Story curated social event, we want to do one online soon so that anyone can jump in from anywhere, and then I want to do an in-person one in Bangkok in the fall too. The best way to find out about it is to join our email newsletter. We send that out about twice a month at the most, and it just gives a quick breakdown of what all we're doing. If you go to risk-show.com, look for the yellow box in the upper right-hand corner that says, get the Risk newsletter. You plug your email address into it, and you'll never miss out on what's up. Folks, there will be a Risk Live show in New York City at Caveat on September 25th. Not only will the podcast keep on keeping on while I'm in Thailand, so will our New York Live show. And on September 25th, JC Cassis will be hosting the show that night. You know, JC is my partner in running this whole operation. You might not have known she's a performer also. Music, comedy, dance, the whole enchilada. She's been hosting this fabulous dance and burlesque show downtown lately called Electric Moon Cabaret, and it's a big old hit, so she's good and warmed up to host the next Risk live show in New York, too. So get your tickets for September 25th at risk-show.com/live. Next, we're going to hear from David Pattison. Here is David now with a story we call Rescuer. Waves washing me.
I'm 11 years old, and I'm on a sandbar in Virginia Beach, so that where I'm at, the water only comes up to my knees, but from me to the shore, you know, the water's deep, and I'm going out into the ocean, catching waves and riding them in. I'm 11 years old, I'm having a great time. I go out, catch a wave, and ride it in. And suddenly, there's no sandbar. It's just empty ocean. I feel a undertow, and it's starting to pull me out towards the ocean. So I start swimming. So I'm a pretty good swimmer. I start swimming. And after swimming for a while, I look up. Shore is no closer. So I swim harder. I start to panic a little bit. I'm swimming harder. And every time I look up, the shore's not getting any closer. I'm really starting to panic at this point. And finally, I get so tired that I have to roll onto my back and float. And while I'm floating there, being pushed further out to sea, I think about my family. I hate them. I hate the fact they don't know that I'm out here, middle of the ocean, about to die. My little brother, Pete's probably on shore bugging my dad for snack money. My older brother, Mike, is probably getting into some kind of mischief somewhere. My two sisters, probably on the boardwalk looking for boys. And my mom, down in Florida, probably the life of some hippie party. Now, we were a happy family. I mean, at one time we were, at least. Mom used to play tag with us all the time, and she would catch us, me and my little brother Pete, and hold us in this huge hug, and we would be squirming to try to get free and screaming and stuff. She took us to D.C., and she would laugh and scream when she saw us on the carousel going around, and, you know, those are good memories. Now, it was the 60s, and it was Martin Luther King and Vietnam and Kennedy, and King was assassinated, Kennedy was assassinated, and a lot of turmoil and hippies. And Mom was very much into the whole hippie scene. And my older sisters were teenagers too, so they all kind of bonded on that. But things changed. Mom and Dad started arguing a lot. And I'd overhear things like drugs and credit cards. And there were times when Mom wouldn't be at home. She wouldn't cook dinner. And Dad would have to take us out. And then one day, she was just gone. No goodbye, nothing. There's kind of a void in the house after she left. My dad, he had to take another job, so he had three jobs to pay the bills, so he was never home. We had no supervision. My two older sisters, well, they spent all their time in the bathroom or hogging the telephone. There was my younger brother, Pete, and whenever we were around each other, we were fighting. Then there was my brother, Mike. Now, Mike took on the mother role. He tried to fill the void, but he was more the disciplinarian. Like, I remember once I didn't do the dishes after dinner or some stupid thing, and He made me eat salt as punishment. Yeah, he was creative in his punishments. He was about 13 or 14 at this time, and I'm 11. He felt it was his duty to man us up. So he had these contests, like push the family car, where we'd push it up and down the driveway to see how strong we were. And he would chase us, like run from the murderer. And he was the murderer and we were the victims. He always had to win, too. He's a win-win kind of brother. So like one time I beat him in ping pong, and he picks up a wine bottle and hurls it straight up my head. Now, if I hadn't ducked, I'd still be trying to learn the alphabet. But he wasn't all bad. The weird thing is that there were some really cool things about him. Like, he would cook for us on nights that Dad was working. And he'd take us to movies and even pay for our way. There was the time he stood up to a bully. This bully threw a rock at me and knocked me off my bicycle. He was kind of like our protector. He was our guardian. Only he could fuck with us. So anyway, I'm there in the ocean, hating my family. I'm floating on my back. And the problem with floating on your back in the ocean is the waves will lap over your face and you'll start choking. So I'd roll over on my stomach and do, they call it a corpse pose. It's kind of like your face down in the water. And then you lift your head up when you want to inhale and exhale in the water. The problem with that is, what the hell is in the water? Jaws had come out. My imagination was like, there's sharks down there. I thought, okay, this is it. I'm dead. And I come up the water, and I see Mike. Hallelujah. If anybody can save me, it's Mike. He's a strong swimmer, and it gives me this renewed strength. So we both start swimming back to shore, but the current is still strong. And I notice that Mike is not having any more luck than I am. At least I'm not alone, right? We're struggling and not getting closer. And then at one point I looked at Mike and I saw fear in his eyes. My stomach dropped. But then I looked at him again and he pointed to the side. So we started swimming parallel to the shore. And after a little bit, all of a sudden the current got weaker and weaker and it was no longer there. And then we're out of the current. And we swim a little bit, and then all of a sudden I look up, and Mike is on a sandbar standing up. And so I stand up too, and we high-five, and we swim to shore. And then once on shore, Mike just walks away. Like, it was nothing. It's like no big deal. The following year, our mom died, probably a drug overdose. And if I was withdrawn before, I was 10 times more withdrawn. I'd come home from school and I'd just go straight to the TV. I didn't talk to kids at school. I'm in elementary school. I dreaded recess because I didn't want to socialize. I didn't want to play. I was really depressed. And Mike noticed that. So where he was a disciplinarian before, he suddenly became compassionate and he would do things like he would make me turn off the TV and lift weights with him. You know, he'd make me go outside. He was driving at this point. He would take me driving out to Dulles Airport, and we'd roll the windows down. It'd be wintertime. We'd roll the windows down and just scream into the wind, just for fun. I think part of it was because I wasn't talking either. And so he was trying to get me to talk and to get out of myself. He would ask me questions like, you know, what's going on? You know, why are you so quiet? You know, you need to speak more. You need to speak up, you know, practice talking. And he really worked with me. Over the years, we've both kind of succeeded in life. We're very similar. I have a house in the suburbs. I have a family, a successful job. He's got a house in the suburbs, a successful job. And we kind of made our way in the world, despite the hardships. And I wondered, where would I be today if it wasn't for Mike? Would I have dropped out of school? Would I be a loner somewhere, crippled with shyness? Or would I be dead? He was our mother, and like a good mom, he kept an eye out for us, whether we wanted him to or not.
stroke and the butterfly and the old Australian crawl. The old Australian crawl. This summer I swam in a public place in a reservoir to boot. At the latter I was informal. At the former I wore my suit. I wore my swimming suit, yeah.
This is Risk. This is Loudon Wainwright III behind me now, and we just heard from David Pattison. More of David's stories can be found at artunabated.com, or you can find him on Instagram at david.pattison. Folks, Risk really needs the support of our listeners to keep on keeping on. And the best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/risk and become a member, or if you already are a member, to increase the amount that you're donating. You can get the ad-free feed of the show there. You can get tons of bonus stories. You can get my Storytelling for Business video course. My latest check-in is over there. There's always lots going on at patreon.com/risk. Or if you want to make a one-time donation, that's at paypal.me/risk show. Next week's conversation story will be with our dear friend John F. O'Donnell, the one and only J-Fod, also one of our favorite comedians. And this story is going to be about the time John got kicked out of his favorite comedy club. But that's next week. And meanwhile, folks, today is the day. Take a risk.
Sink or swim.
Time to sink or swim.
Sink or swim.
I know not how I'll sink or swim.
It was sink or swim, and there were a lot of drownings.